Hey everyone, welcome back to all my listeners. Now I hope you're all having a great day so far. I know I'm trying my very best to get there. Now if it's your first time finding me, thanks so much and welcome. Welcome to episode 9 of my 6th season. Today is Wednesday, June 29th, 2022. My name is Sonal Patel, and this is the Paint the Medical Picture podcast series. Now, all right, you guys, I've got so much to get into today. So I'm going to be diving into my compliance tips and my compliance recommendations today on the new hot off the press CBR that's just being mailed out for orthoses referring providers. And hey, you know what today is, right? It's my very favorite month-end episode where I discuss my favorite highlights that I've combed through from the month of June's criminal and civil enforcement cases involving fraud, waste, and abuse. And of course, I round out today's episode with a remarkable quote on vision and leadership by the founder of the Servant Leader Movement, Robert K. Greenleaf. If you've checked me out on LinkedIn, you know I'm all about compliance and protecting our physicians and our valued healthcare professionals when it comes to the business of medicine. I hope this week with me brings you enough to take back to your organizations to want to dive in deeper, to use my tips and best practices to ensure success. I hope this podcast will help you boost the quality of documentation capture and improve your coding accuracy as you help your providers paint the medical picture. If you like what you're hearing, please go ahead and hit that subscribe button now so you don't miss another episode. Please write in a review and kindly drop me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to my podcast. I'd really love your support. And you know what, you guys? This is where you help me climb the Apple Podcast charts time and time again. Every time you give me a 5-star review, 5-star rating, and write some kind words. So I totally appreciate all that you guys have given me over these 2 years. I appreciate it so much. You have no idea. It keeps me going and motivated to keep giving you new weekly episodes. So I love it. Thank you. And as always, a friendly disclaimer. Remember, I'm bringing you the news, current healthcare industry news, my compliance tips and my recommendations based on my over 12 years of experience in front office, in back end, in coding, and in billing for multi-specialty physicians, compliance, and auditing for both E&M and surgical operative reports. These are my opinions alone and are not to be construed as legal advice. So, let's get into newsworthy, the month's fraud, waste, and abuse cases. Now, the month of June saw a whopping 44 cases as of the recording of this episode. Early June saw a case of a judge ordering a family rehab entity to pay $9.6 million in damages for submitting hundreds of fraudulent TRICARE and Medicaid claims. Now, this family rehab allegedly reaped hundreds of thousands of dollars from taxpayers by improperly filing claims with agencies designated to provide physical therapy and speech therapy services to children as well as military families. And according to court documents, it was allegedly determined that approximately 800 false claims for services were improperly billed to Medicaid and TRICARE. Specifically, those improper services were billed under the names of a physical therapist and a speech therapist who were no longer employed at the entity and therefore could not possibly have provided the services in question. Now, early June also saw a case involving a home sleep testing company who agreed to pay $3.5 million to settle federal healthcare fraud suits. Now, the founder and vice president are alleged to have fraudulently billed Medicare and 4 other federal healthcare programs for medically unnecessary services and for services that involved kickbacks. Now, the case alleged that they submitted claims for patients' second and third nights of home sleep testing when, in fact, the company knew that only a single night or one night of testing was needed to effectively diagnose obstructive sleep apnea and that it routinely tested and claimed only one night for patients with private health insurance. Now, as a result, the suit alleged that in addition to defrauding 5 federal agencies, they also unlawfully multiplied the copays it received from senior citizens who were Medicare beneficiaries. Now, this lawsuit also alleged that the company's business model relied on several unlawful kickback schemes, which incentivized physicians and their staff to refer all of their home sleep testing services to this home sleep testing company. Now, early June also saw a doctor who paid $9.5 million to resolve allegations of fraud against Medicare and Medi-Cal for billing for procedures and tests that were never performed. Now, these procedures, services, and tests that were never conducted or administered to patients included injections of medication designed to treat osteoarthritis and osteoporosis, the drainage of tailbone cysts, and the removal and destruction of various growths. Now, as a part of this settlement agreement, this particular doctor admitted that he had intentionally submitted false claims for payment with the intent to deceive the United States and the state of California. And in doing so, this doctor violated both the Federal False Claims Act and the California False Claims Act. Both of those statutes allow the government to recover damages and penalties for the presentation of false claims for payment to the United States and the state of California, respectively. Now, the civil settlement with the doctor resolves allegations originally brought in a lawsuit filed by two relators, or whistleblowers, who happened to be the doctor's former medical assistant and the doctor's former IT consultant. Now, mid-June saw a man arrested for allegedly distributing over $230 million of adulterated HIV medication that were ultimately dispensed to unsuspecting patients throughout the country. Now, this man was allegedly part of a nationwide scheme to defraud our FDA, that's our U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and also illegally distribute more than $230 million in adulterated and misbranded prescription drugs that were dispensed, again, to unsuspecting patients. Now, as alleged in this indictment, this man acquired large quantities of HIV medication illegally and then created false drug labeling and other documentation to make it appear as though these high-priced drugs had been obtained legitimately. Now, to carry out this scheme, he and his co-conspirators established licensed wholesale drug distribution companies in the states of Florida, New Jersey, Connecticut, and New York. Now, he and his co-conspirators use those companies to sell the adulterated drugs at steep discounts to other co-conspirators at wholesale pharmaceutical distributors in the states of Mississippi, Maryland, and New York. Those wholesale pharmaceutical distributors then resold the drugs to pharmacies throughout the country, which billed the drugs to health insurers, including Medicare, and then dispensed the adulterated and misbranded HIV medication to unsuspecting patients. Now, as alleged in this indictment, between approximately 2019 and 2021, the wholesale pharmaceutical distributors paid this man and his co-conspirators more than $230 million for the illegally acquired and adulterated prescription drugs. He allegedly laundered those hundreds of millions of dollars through the use of several corporations in Miami, Florida. Now, this man is charged with conspiracy to deliver into interstate commerce adulterated and misbranded drugs, conspiracy to traffic in medical products with false documentation, conspiracy to commit money laundering, and specific money laundering offenses. If convicted of all counts, he faces a maximum total penalty of more than 100 years in prison. Now, mid-June also saw a large nationwide pharmaceutical company agreeing to pay over $233 million in a multi-state effort that resolves allegations that from January 1st of 2013 through June 30th of 2020, this pharmaceutical company knowingly underpaid Medicaid rebates due for its drug for Acthar Gel. Now, under the Medicaid drug rebate program, when a manufacturer increases the price of a drug faster than the rate of inflation, it must pay the Medicaid program a per-unit rebate of the difference between the drug's current price and the price of the drug if its price has gone up at the general rate of inflation since 1990 or the year the drug first came to market, whichever is later. Now, however, the state of Florida and the other government plaintiffs, which include all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico, alleged that this pharmaceutical company and its predecessor began paying rebates for Acthar in 2013, as if Acthar was a new drug just approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, that's our FDA, rather than the drug that was first introduced to market in 1952. Now, allegedly, this practice meant that the companies ignored all pre-2013 price increases when calculating and paying Medicaid rebates from Acthar from 2013 until 2020. Now, in particular, the state of Florida alleged that Acthar's price had already risen to more than $28,000 per vial by 2013, therefore ignoring all pre-2013 price increases for Medicaid rebate purposes had the effect of significantly lowering the pharmaceutical company's Medicaid rebate payments for Acthar. Now, the pharmaceutical company is now admitting that Acthar was not a new drug as of 2013, but rather approved by the FDA and marketed prior to 1990. They agreed to correct Acthar's base date average manufacturer price, that AMP rate, and that it will not change the date in the future. And of course, there were also many, many of the usual suspects, like more opioids distributors, overprescribing galore, kickbacks, bribery schemes, more DME fraud, genetics testing fraud, and of course, money laundering. But I wanted to pay particular attention to two cases involving COVID-19 schemes. Now, the first involves a registered nurse who pleads guilty in a COVID-19 vaccination record card fraud case. Here, according to court records, the RN admitted to stealing or embezzling authentic COVID-19 vaccination record cards from a VA hospital, along with vaccine lot numbers necessary to make the cards appear legitimate, and then reselling those cards and information to individuals within the downtown community. Now, her theft of the COVID-19 vaccination record cards allegedly began at least as early as May 2021 and continued through September 2021. She then sold the cards for $150 through $200 each and communicated with buyers primarily via Facebook Messenger. And the second case involved a man who pleaded guilty for his role in a conspiracy to commit healthcare fraud and receive kickbacks in connection with fraudulent testing claims for COVID-19. Here, details reveal that the man owned and operated a company that conducted business with medical testing companies. In March 2020, at a time when many individuals reported difficulty obtaining COVID-19 tests, he and the others agreed to extend their schemes further to also incorporate those tests, along with significantly more expensive and medically unnecessary respiratory pathogen panel tests. Specifically, the man and his co-conspirators agreed that he would be paid kickbacks for each COVID-19 test submitted to a laboratory, provided that those tests were bundled with significantly more expensive respiratory pathogen panel tests, which did not treat nor did it identify COVID-19, and regardless of the medical necessity of either test. Now, he agreed to use sham contracts, allegedly, and those sham invoices to conceal this portion of the scheme as well. Now, the count of conspiracy to commit healthcare fraud carries a maximum potential punishment of 10 years in prison. The count of conspiracy to violate the anti-kickback statute carries a maximum potential penalty of 5 years in prison. Both offenses are also punishable by a fine of $250,000 or twice the gross gain or loss from the offense. All right. Wow, right? This month of June's enforcement cases are certainly diverse, right? Just like always, so many types, so many bad apples in the bunch. But the number of these COVID-19 shams and scams are still trickling in, right? And it's already June 2022. They're slowly trickling in. I don't think we're done seeing them yet. I don't think we're done with it yet, sadly. So remember, I do my very best each month trying to highlight those cases that I find most interesting. I try my best to provide solid guidance and advice to providers to be mindful of correct coding and compliant billing practices to avoid joining these very serious, these very public, and often very hefty outcomes in the millions of dollars, right? I always believe these types of fraud, waste, and abuse cases are so helpful. So please take a deeper look into these reports and see how they may affect you and your provider and your facility. So start self-auditing your service claims and coordinating documentation to ensure you are meeting compliance. And now it's time for my best practice tips in Trusty Tip. So in today's compliance tip, I wanted to focus on the latest comparative billing report, or CBR, issued on orthoses referring providers. Now this is CBR number 202206. That's right, it's the sixth CBR already for the year for 2022. Now, the orthoses vulnerability is disclosed in this letter that you might have received, or you will be receiving. So, according to the 2021 Medicare Fee-for-Service Supplemental Improper Payment Data Report, they disclose that there has been a 28.6% improper payment rate for durable medical equipment, prosthetics, orthotics, and supplies. That's our DME POS. Now, of that improper payment rate, they isolate it even further to a whopping 76.9% is attributed to insufficient documentation. Of course, 76.9% is attributable to insufficient documentation. And breaking it down even further, a much smaller percent is due to medical necessity errors at 2%. So, this particular CBR number 202206 focuses again on referring providers on claims for off-the-shelf and prefabricated orthoses, as well as custom-fitted orthoses. And these products are all outlined with targeted HCPCS codes. And your letter will disclose to you a list of about 15 or so HCPCS codes. Now, they are L0642, L0648, L0650, L1820, L1833, L1851, L1971, L2397, L3170, L3660, L3760, L3761, L3908, L3916, and L3960. Now, specifically, why don't I break down the definitions for us? Okay, specifically, your L0642 is defined as lumbar orthosis, sagittal control with rigid anterior and posterior panels. Posterior extends from L1 to below L5, produces intracavitary pressure to reduce the load on the intervertebral discs, include straps, closures, may include padding, shoulder straps, pendulous abdomen design, and it is prefabricated off the shelf. Now, there are still two more of these back braces that are included in the list. So L0648, now that's defined as lumbar sacral orthosis, sagittal control with rigid anterior and posterior panels. Posterior extends from the sacrococcygeal junction to the T9 vertebra, produces intracavitary pressure to reduce load on the intervertebral discs, include straps, closures, may include padding, shoulder straps, pendulous abdomen design. Again, it is also prefabricated and off the shelf. And then finally, the third back brace type of item is with our HCPCS code L0650, and that's defined as lumbar sacral orthosis, sagittal coronal control with rigid anterior and posterior frame or panels. Posterior extends from the sacrococcygeal junction to the T9 vertebra, lateral strength provided by rigid lateral frame or panels, produces intracavitary pressure to reduce the load on the intravertebral discs, includes straps, closures may include padding, shoulder straps, pendulous abdomen design. It's again prefabricated and off the shelf. And then let's move on. There are another three codes here that are identified for the knee. They are knee orthoses. So let's start with the definition for HCPCS code L1820. So it's defined as knee orthosis, elastic with condylar pads and joints with or without patellar control, prefabricated, includes fitting and adjustment. Then let's move on to HCPCS code L1833. That's defined as knee orthosis, adjustable knee joints, which are unicentric or polycentric, positional orthosis, rigid support, prefabricated, off the shelf. And then finally, that last knee orthosis code is HCPCS code L1851, which is defined as knee orthosis, single upright thigh and calf with adjustable flexion and extension joint, which can be unicentric or polycentric, medial, lateral, and rotation control with or without varus and valgus adjustment, prefabricated off the shelf. And then let's move on to HCPCS code L1971. That's for our ankle-foot orthosis, plastic or other material with ankle joint, prefabricated, includes fitting and adjustment. And then let's move on to the next HCPCS code. L2397 is defined as addition to lower extremity orthosis, suspension sleeve. Then let's move on to the next HCPCS code, L3170. That's defined as foot, plastic, silicone or equal, heel stabilizer, prefabricated, off the shelf, each. And then let's move on to the next HCPCS code, L3660. That's defined as shoulder orthosis, figure of eight design, abduction, restrainer, canvas and webbing, prefabricated, off the shelf. Then let's move on. There are two codes that are specific to the elbow orthoses. The first is for HCPCS code L3760, which is defined as elbow orthosis with adjustable position locking joints, prefabricated, item that has been trimmed, bent, molded, assembled, or otherwise customized to fit a specific patient by an individual with expertise. Then let's move on to that second elbow orthosis HCPCS code is L3761, which is defined as elbow orthosis with adjustable position locking joints, prefabricated off the shelf. Then let's move on. There are two codes that are identified specifically to the wrist and hand orthoses. So the first code is for L3908, which is defined as wrist-hand orthosis, wrist extension control cock up, non-molded, prefabricated, off the shelf. And then the next HCPCS code for the wrist and hand is for L3916. Wrist-hand orthosis includes one or more non-torsion joints, elastic bands, turnbuckles, may include soft interface straps, prefabricated, off the shelf. And then finally, the last HCPCS code in your CBR letter is for L3960, which is defined as shoulder, elbow, wrist, hand orthosis, abduction, positioning, airplane design, prefabricated, includes fitting and adjustment. Now, of course, this particular CBR reminds us to use, again, this data-driven report to compare your billing practices with those of your peers in your state as well as across the country. Now, CBR number 202206 summarizes statistics for services with specific dates of service from January 1st of 2021 through December 31st of 2021. Again, one full year. And nationwide, there have been 110,796 rendering providers who were listed as the referring providers on claims for the targeted codes I identified above, which were worth over $207 million that were paid out for these claims. Now, this particular CBR is also specifically identifying CBRs and the public health emergency, the PHE, that we're still in. Now, this particular CBR provides data regarding your claim submission as compared to others within your state and within the country, and this report is offered to facilitate an analysis of your billing submissions during the timeframe that did occur during the PHE. So they're telling you to please be mindful and consider how your billing practices may have changed during the PHE when you receive this particular CBR and all of the facts that are disclosed throughout it. Now, of course, the orthoses referrals have a desired behavior, right? So the CBR wants our orthoses referrals to do these types of things. They must include proper documentation for orthoses, which means you must be having sufficient documentation to support the medical necessity of all of those supplies I outlined above. And then you also have to have responsible referrals, right? Which means referrals for orthoses to a low number of suppliers. And then there have to be products referred for patients in need of each orthosis. So those are the types of things, the desired behavior that Medicare would like to see for responsible referrals. And then the CBR letter unfolds even further. And they talk about the criteria for receiving your CBR number 202206 involves number one, that the listed referring provider on claims has had at least $50,000 or more in total paid charges for the L codes, right? L0642, L0648, L0650, L1820, L1833, L1851, L1971, L2397, L3170, L3660, L3760, L3761, L3908, L3916, and L3960. And then number two, this is really good. They also believe that you were a recipient of a previous CBR number, and that CBR number is 202111. So that letter was issued back in 2021. So let's not forget that that CBR number 202111 was the third educational letter in this special edition CBR series that was sent to selected providers based on the criteria and metrics established through claims data review and research. So then after receiving this particular third special edition CBR, they said you may be receiving one additional special edition CBR educational letter again. So each special edition CBR educational letter will include comparison and educational data. And criteria for receiving future special edition CBR educational letters is as follows. They disclosed in your CBR 202111 that letter number four, which is this one that I'm talking about today in June of 2022, this particular letter is letter number four. And that will be sent to any provider who remains an outlier based on the defined criteria. And if you no longer meet the defined criteria, you won't be receiving this special edition CBR letter number four, which is what I'm talking about now. So they end with, we hope that this special edition CBR series can help enhance your billing and or your prescribing practices and support internal compliance activities at your practice. So then they move on to the metrics of CBR number 202206. So they're saying that there are three things that they have analyzed according to these metrics. Number one, the percentage of beneficiaries referred for the targeted codes. Number two, the percentage of paid amounts for the targeted codes. And then number three, the percentage of suppliers for the targeted codes. Now, it is critical to understand that your CBR does not indicate that you're going to get an official audit, right? And I've said this many times on prior CBR episodes. So please be mindful that this is a phrase coming directly from the MACs that issue the CBRs. So please take that with plenty and plenty of grains of salt. More directly, consider this to be your notice, your warning that you are being looked at closely. So you too should look at your own data, right? You too should look at it closely. Now, the value of the CBR to providers is that it serves as a tool. It is a definite, useful tool to help you look at your billing patterns as compared to your peers. And the value also includes the facts that specific coding guidelines and billing information will be detailed. Now, the CBR informs providers whose billing patterns differ from those of their peers. So the desired behavior here is to capture proper and compliant documentation for orthoses referring providers, right? Absolutely. So the vulnerability of DME POS claims continues to be staggering, right? Let's not forget that back in 2020, there was a 2020 Medicare fee-for-service supplemental improper payment data report that reflected an improper payment rate of 31.8% for durable medical equipment, prosthetics, orthotics, and supplies. Again, that's our DME POS, of which 65% of that was attributed to improper and insufficient documentation, right? So that percentage was at 65%. And then 5.9% was attributed to medical necessity errors. So for this year, yes, the number went down to 2% for medical necessity errors, but then the insufficient documentation percentage went up to 76.9%, right? So even higher than the prior year's data report in 2020. So there's an increase in insufficient documentation, right? From 65% to 76.9%. So in my opinion, those numbers are going the wrong direction, right? It's going the wrong way. So we must do better. We must do better. So it's a great time, I believe, to just keep diving deeper into your own data. I know I say this almost every episode, but we need to start digging into our own data and beat those payers to the punch and pay attention to what we're sending out the door, right? Is it really in compliance? And it's definitely fundamental if you have Medicare as a payer to keep your eye on correct and compliant coding and billing practices to make sure you are adhering to all of them. It's so important to make sure that your clinical documentation addresses and captures all indications for coverage and you avoid the whopping 76.9% of this improper payment rate that's due to insufficient documentation for orthoses referring providers. So a better, smarter approach is one that's proactive and starts by painting a clear, rich, and vibrant medical picture the first time, so your certified medical coder can then abstract codes with accuracy. And finally, I focus Season 6's spark on vision and leadership. I want this sixth season spark to be filled with our world's thought leaders, writers, artists, philosophers, everyone who inspires the need for vision and leadership in all we strive to do. So, in this week's inspiring quote in Spark is from Robert K. Greenleaf. A mark of a leader, an attribute that puts him in a position to show the way for others, is that he is better than most at pointing the direction. As long as he is leading, he always has a goal. So very true, right? I think this is an amazing quote that reminds us and inspires us that leaders are unique. This quote reminds us that leaders possess a vision. This quote inspires us to find those traits within ourselves. It also reminds us that we can be the leaders and the visionaries of our own lives. I am happy Robert K. Greenleaf's spark still burns brightly in all of us today. So that wraps up today's episode. And as always, I appreciate you all diving into today with me. If you want more information from me, please go ahead and follow me on LinkedIn. I'll leave links to everything in the show notes below. Please have an amazing week ahead and enjoy some sunshine, some good food, some family, and some friends, just in time for the long holiday weekend ahead. Please continue staying safe and healthy as well. We still have COVID-19 surrounding us. Thank you so much for listening in on today's episode, and I hope every week with me brings you closer to helping your providers paint a masterpiece. See you next Wednesday.